A group of women gathered in Cambridge, Massachusetts recently to celebrate a school with a long and storied past, a fleeting present, and not much of a future. The Radcliffe College alums weren't whooping as loudly as they did at past reunions. This year, Radcliffe acknowledged for the first time what many have known for many years, that the College for Women no longer exists. During commencement exercises for Harvard University, the Radcliffe class of 1951 held its 50th reunion. Our reporter, Alice Furlow, has only just recovered from joining her classmates in Cambridge.
Radcliffe, now we rise to greet thee, alma mater, hail to thee.
Some of us can still sing the Radcliffe hymn, if a bit tremulously. I felt tremulous about going to a Radcliffe reunion for the first time and facing the first gathering of the reunion, a buffet dinner in a classmate's elegant house. Frightening. Here were about 90 of my classmates, all 71 years old, and we looked for some reason like a bunch of old ladies. We were even dressed like old ladies, in print dresses and pant suits with stomach-concealing tops. Where were our camel's hair coats with belts in back, and our long, tight-waisted new-look skirts, and our ballet slippers? But after the initial shock of non-recognition, memories of each other and our beloved college began to come back.
I recognized you. I bet you didn't recognize me.
Yes, I did.
No.
When? Didn't I pick you out on the front steps?
I thought I picked you out.
Maybe we both picked each other out.
You didn't sing with Gloria Rosenbaum.
No, but I wrote a song about Gloria Rosenbaum as it were a Bach.
It was you and I who sang that. And we carried...
Gloria Rosenbaum.
Happy birthday. That was Helen Bernstein, now Mrs. Wasserman. We hadn't met since our freshman year. Helen's husband had sent flowers to the party. Helen read the card.
Happy 50th anniversary to Helen, senior class president 51, and to all her classmates. From the lucky guy who met you in front of the Harvard coupe 50 years ago.
Lots of my classmates married Harvard men. Of course, they outnumbered us 5-1, and Radcliffe Yard was a short bike ride from Harvard Yard, where we had all our classes. But no one I knew chose Radcliffe in hopes of finding a husband. My parents sent me there from Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, to be steeped in city culture, the Boston Symphony, the Fine Arts Museum. All this and Harvard, too, was the idea. Radcliffe was very unfashionable then. Of the 80 girls in my high school class, only two of us went there. Tuition, room, and board cost about $1,400 a year. We Radcliffe girls looked drab compared with the rich girls at nearby Wellesley. Gloria Rosenbaum and I rather despised them.
I can remember coming up on the train with the Wellesley girls, and we knew who they were, with their page boys and their,
266 of us graduated in 1951, and half of us contributed an autobiographical page to the 50th reunion report. This daunting document is full of remarkable achievements and, of course, remarkable grandchildren. 12 of us are listed as lost, and 35 of us are dead. And now Radcliffe College has been pronounced dead. I telephoned Dean Drew Gilpin Faust, an eminent historian on the Harvard faculty, to ask her what exactly she's dean of.
Well, Radcliffe is now an institute for advanced study, our mission being to advance every field of knowledge, but within that broad sweep to have a special commitment to women, gender, and society.
I had an idea for one of the dean's Women and Gender Fellowships, a study of the Radcliffe class of 1951. Okay, we weren't great feminists. None of us protested when Professor Whiting excluded Radcliffe girls from his lecture on Chaucer's pornographic Miller's Tale. And we did marry all those Harvard men. But anyone who thinks women of the 1950s were all housewives should take note. Our class included the poet Adrienne Rich, the science fiction writer Ursula Le Guin, the novelist Rona Jaffe,
and the late Ilona Carmel, who lost a leg at Buchenwald, wrote a novel about her experiences and taught at MIT. And how about Leslie Guy Connery, a firefighter?
I joined the Kent, Connecticut Volunteer Fire Department as the first female, and I've been doing it for 26 years.
No one I met at this reunion had led as wildly unstudious a Radcliffe life as I had, spending half my time acting in plays on various Harvard stages. And I couldn't find anyone who remembered my favorite hangouts, the Savoy Jazz Club in Boston. Or Jim Cronin's Bar, where beer-drinking assistant professors sometimes mark my papers. At last, in one of the luncheon tents, Anne Simmons Butler tapped me on the shoulder.
Goodness, how do you do?
I had no idea! You were Alice Furlow. I hear this so distinguished voice on NPR, and I think, boy, she's a neat kid. Now I hear that's you. That is not like you. You were such a bouncy, into everything, out every night at Radcliffe.
On commencement morning, Harvard Yard was crowded and festive with great red banners hanging from the trees.
I'm threading my way on the way to where we're supposed to line up for the parade through a very segregated part of this pre-commencement through a huge bevy of old men who apparently were the Harvard boys of my day. And oh dear, I was gonna talk to one that had a long white beard, but I don't dare.
And the older alumni passing between the lines of those rear halves.
Filing into commencement in the outer yard, we old alumni passed between two rows of young Harvard women and men about to graduate in their black gowns and mortarboards. They were applauding us on their special day. Thousands cheered as thousands got degrees, and the overwhelming scene was different from our Radcliffe graduation half a century ago. Christine Bossard Carpenter remembers it.
We lined up in the Radcliffe yard, then we marched as a group across the common in Cambridge, and the Cambridge finest held traffic for us. We crossed the street, and the graduation ceremony was in Sanders Theater, but it was strictly an all-girl affair.
I decided not to stay for the last day, which was being called Radcliffe Day. I was sorry to miss the commemorative service in the Memorial Church, though. Radcliffe alumni were going to sing in the choir. I did take in part of their rehearsal at 7:30 a.m. in the church basement. The conductor was Mary Beekman, Radcliffe 1975, and from the way she warmed up the group, I could see the music of the service was going to be terrific. As the elderly choir practiced the Radcliffe hymn, I sneaked out. Was nearly empty. A few workmen were taking down the banners and digging up the signposts. I walked across it, full of regrets for all I missed at Radcliffe while I was so entranced with freedom and frivolity. I thought of my friends hurrying along these paths to classes all those years ago. One was Adrienne Rich, whose first book of poems was published during our senior year with a foreword by W.H. Auden. Part of an early poem of hers called Autumn Equinox, about an old couple, just suited my post-reunion musings on old age and memory and youth. Now we are old like nature, patient, staid, unhurried from the year's well-worn routine. We wake and take the day for what it is, and sleep as calmly as the dead who know they'll wake to their reward. We have become as unself-conscious as a pair of trees, not questioning, but living. Even autumn can only carry through what spring began. What else could happen now but loss of leaf and rain upon the boughs? So I have thought, and wondered faintly where the thought began, and when the irritable gust of youth stopped to find a new dissatisfaction. Goodbye, Radcliffe. It was a privilege to know you.